Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. We got a big show today. We're going to talk about MLS season that just kicked off, who we think will win at the end of the year. Going to talk about my favorite quarterbacks in the NFL draft. Just do a quick run through of that. We have a big guest as well. Steven Rizzotto writes for the SF Bay, host of the Rizzocast. So we're going to have him on to talk baseball, San Francisco Giants specifically, talking about the MLB lockout. We're also joined by a special guest. Our cousin Parker is here for a school project, watching us record the show. How you doing, Parker?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Parker's a big Jazz fan. Dad is a professional pickleball player.
Yeah. He's sponsored by Vulcan Pickleball, I think. So
nice. It's a big deal.
So yeah, see, Vulcan Pickleball, if you're listening, if you want to send us some stuff, we could talk about you even more.
But just like we do about Ghost Golf, who does send us stuff, and we love Ghost Golf. Again, they have dope magnetic towels, golf gloves, belts, all that cool stuff. Link in my bio. I've actually forgot what my like tag thing is, where you get a discount. So let me pull that up. This is obviously not a read. We're just doing the spur of the moment. But again, ghostgolf.com, links in my bio. The discount code is GGClub10. Again, Ghost Golf, GGClub10. Get 10% off there. Is there anything you want to talk about before we get to the interview?
No, I'd say let's jump right in and then we'll go from there.
Nope, it's an awesome interview. So we're doing Steven Rizzotto, then coming back, talk some MLS and some NFL draft stuff. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake, where we are joined by Steven Rizzotto. I actually never asked, did I pronounce your name right, your last name?
Yeah, you pronounced it perfectly. You killed it.
Perfect. Awesome. So Steven is a writer for the San Francisco Bay, host of the Rizzocast podcast. Obviously writing for the Bay, covers a lot of the Giants, which is my favorite baseball team. So we're excited to have you on. Appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's looking forward to it.
Yeah, so obviously it's a bummer day for baseball with everything getting happened, but I want to start just quickly kind of asking about you a little bit. So the podcast that you do, the Rizzocast, you've had major league pitchers on, former general managers. How'd you get started in that, and how do you line up all these awesome guests?
Yeah, so I got started kind of like how a lot of people nowadays get started in stuff. They're stuck at home. I was stuck at home in May of 2020. Trying to figure out what to do. And I realized I had wanted to do a podcast for quite some time, and I had wanted to base it around baseball. And I had some early connections, you know, some friends from high school, that type of thing. And I originally wanted to make it based on, you know, college players and high school players and trying to get their names out there. But it really ended up growing into something even more. I ended up getting former players on, current players on, minor league players, members of the media, some of the people that I've become fond of in the industry. It's been great. It's been a great variety of guests that I've had on, and we're almost to 100 episodes, and it's been a pretty cool ride. But I really enjoy talking to different people, networking, and giving other people a chance to share their baseball journey.
So, because it's something in addition to your job as a writer with SF Bay, right?
Yeah, this is something I do on the side. Obviously, during baseball or during the off season, I'm pretty free when it comes to activities to do, but Rizzocast is kind of my side venture, and it's something that I do in addition, and it's been a lot of fun. But a lot of the people that I've come across while writing for SF Bay have always asked about Rizzocast. They always ask when the next episode is coming out, who's going to be on it. So it's well up there in terms of people that I know that listen to it. And I'm really thankful for that. It's been pretty awesome.
Now, are you from San Francisco, or how did you get into writing for SF Bay and covering the Giants specifically?
Yeah, grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, on the peninsula. Went to school in San Francisco, went to a high school in San Francisco, shout out Archbishop Reardon High School in San Francisco. And grew up a big baseball fan. Didn't really get into it until about, 9, 10 years old, I'd say. Grew up watching those really good Giants teams in the early 2010s. Kind of fell in love with the game then. And, I played baseball in high school, 4 years of high school baseball, and I really wasn't that good. So I figured there's no future there. So I figured that journalism was the next best thing. I had a passion for writing. I really enjoy delivering news. I would always enjoy breaking news to family members who haven't seen it yet, who don't have Twitter accounts. So that was always fun for me. And ended up getting really lucky with SF Bay, and they had an opportunity open for me, and it's been a blast ever since. So yeah, it's definitely been cool growing up in the Bay Area. I feel like the diversity of the city and the different types of people that, you're brought up with that are from the same place as you really brings out the best in you. And it brings out a creative aspect when it comes to writing and kind of networking.
That's awesome. Now, how much do they let you, and I ask this because I struggle with my own biases. I just, really favor the teams that I like when we're on the show. Does it help being with San Francisco Bay that you get to write about the Giants more than any other team? Or do you find yourself having to kind of rein your own fandom in to be more objective and, give people a more accurate picture of what's actually going on?
Yeah, so that's actually really tough, and that's a really good question. So it used to be, a long time ago, when Walter Cronkite or whatever was on the news and everybody would tune into the nightly news, journalists would always have to be objective, right? They would always have to tell both sides. And now I think we're kind of shifting into something else to where, journalists, with everything that's happening in the world, a lot of people are starting to take sides in the industry. And are starting to dictate for themselves what's going on. But in terms of sports, I think the golden rule is always simple. There's no cheering in the press box. And that is actually a rule at the Oracle Park press box. If you cheer, you simply will get thrown out. So you can't have any allegiances in the press box when you're covering a game. It's not that difficult. I don't think if I'm working, I don't think there's ever any point in time where I've ever been rooting for a team, maybe rooting for the game to be over if it's a long day, but never really rooting for a team because whatever happens happens, and there's really no control of it. And it's a different experience from being a fan. And I think there's definitely a ton of energy in the ballpark when something crazy happens. But I think you do have to kind of separate your allegiances a little bit.
Now, here's a question. So every baseball writer we have on, we always ask, what's the best stadium? I think you're going to say Oracle. It's either Oracle, Petco Park in San Diego, or Pittsburgh's Park, PNC. Those are the three we usually get. Would you put any other stadium over San Francisco's?
San Francisco's pretty great. I mean, there's so many. I think Petco would probably be my second. But San Francisco's pretty great. It's in the perfect location. And when I mean perfect location, downtown San Francisco, on the water, the weather is not how it was at Candlestick. It's nicer, but it's still got the San Francisco cold. It's not outrageously freezing during night games, so that's always a positive. And the scenery's awesome. I mean, it doesn't look like any other ballpark in baseball. There's different attractions, if you will, that kind of differentiate it, itself from some of the others. And Petco's nice, too, because Petco is in San Diego. And San Diego, in my mind, is one of the greatest cities in America. The weather's always perfect. It's got the potential to be a really good baseball city. I think it's kind of growing towards that direction. But I think it depends a lot on, the city. I think the city's characteristics really help kind of what the baseball ballpark is supposed to be like. Yankee Stadium, there's that, it's considered a cathedral. And Wrigley Field is a staple in Chicago. And if there's not the history and the history of the team and the city and the franchise, then the ballpark will have less significance. So I think it has a lot to do with location, team, and obviously the pure beauty of the ballpark. But I'd say San Francisco is number one for sure. But I'm biased.
Right. I am too, because our dad is from Santa Cruz. So we grew up going to Giants games, going to San Francisco. So that's where I fell in love with it. And my favorite thing about the Giants is how passionate the fan base is. I've been all over the country, and I'm a big football guy, so it's mostly football stuff. But San Francisco during baseball season, the only thing I can really compare it to and is Barcelona during a soccer game. Obviously, that's a step above everything else, but I've never been anywhere in the country where it's as passionate as San Francisco is about the Giants.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you notice is that, and they did have the sellout streak for a lot of years, but, you know, since it's broken, I don't think it really, you know, people really keep track of it anymore. But if you walk in San Francisco on a game day, everybody is wearing a Giants hat. Everybody's wearing a Giants hat. Everybody's wearing a Giants shirt. And that's just not in San Francisco on game days. That's San Francisco. That's the Bay Area year-round. And it's a daily occurrence to see someone wearing Giants gear, and you know, they're passionate about their team. They're passionate about the history of the team, and it's got a really rich history. And I think you have the New York Yankees. I think you have, you know, you could add the St. Louis Cardinals in that bunch too. And then I think, you know, San Francisco Giants are right up there with those two in terms of history. And, you know, there's been enough history made in San Francisco from a baseball side of things that makes it a really good baseball town. I mean, not to mention the Bay Area is very spoiled at this point. The 49ers have had playoff appearances. The Warriors have had championships. The Giants had the 3-5 run. The Oakland A's have been consistent postseason contenders. I mean, it is a baseball area, and I think it's really a hot spot in that regard in California.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing. I'm picking up everything you're putting down. Getting into more the Giants specific, the actual roster, Buster Posey retired, obviously. I don't know how much you've gotten a chance to watch Joey Bart, who's the projected catcher prospect coming up, number two overall pick in the draft a few years ago. Rumored in trade talks last year. I was glad when we didn't trade him and we still managed to get Chris Bryant. Between him or Patrick Bailey, who's another catcher prospect, do you think they're set? Do you think they try to get another catcher for this 2022 season? Have you looked at that at all?
Yeah, I think right now, as of now, it's Joey Bart's gig to lose. That's from every indication the Giants have given out. That's kind of what it's going to be. That was said by Farhan Zaidi right after Buster Posey retired. I can't imagine anything has changed. He's someone who hit really well in AAA last year. He's battled health injuries through his professional career. But I think the Giants would be happy with a guy who provides some right-handed thump in the middle of their lineup. I don't know if that's going to be immediate, but I do think that when right, he's a difference maker in a lineup. But I think the main questions and the only questions about him are defensively, and his receiving ability, his willingness and ability to work with the pitching staff. We saw him be a little bit overwhelmed at times in 2020 when he made his debut. He didn't look all that comfortable at the plate, didn't look all that comfortable with the veteran starting pitchers. So I think now it's a bit of a different opportunity for him, and maybe some more confidence will come out knowing that he's going to have a bigger role here. And it's great that Kurt Casale's there too, because you know, young catchers take a long time to develop, as we know. It's not every day you get the Joe Mauers and Buster Poseys of the world who are ready seemingly right out of high school and college. So it does take time, and I think Casale's going to need to step it up a little bit and be, you know, the kind of guy that Benji Molina was to Buster Posey in 2010. And I also think for the veteran starting pitchers on the staff, and for even a guy like Logan Webb, it means you got to know yourself more. You know, you can't rely on Buster Posey anymore to, you know, give you everything you want. You have to take it into your own hands. You have to control your own game, control your own tempo, and get out there and pitch and guide Joey Bart the way you want to, you know, in the direction you want to go. So that's going to be the biggest learning curve. I think spring training is going to play a huge part in that. In terms of how long his leash is, I don't know. I mean, Patrick Bailey's there. It's great to have more depth. I don't, you know, everybody's thinking that maybe Bailey gets traded because of Bart, or maybe Bart gets traded because of Bailey. Why not have them both on the roster at some point? You can never have too much catching help. But yeah, I don't know how long his leash is. I think the Giants are going to stick with him first and foremost and see how it works out.
Yeah, I think, and I hope he'll do well. I view catchers like I view defensive backs in the NFL, in the sense that you can't have too many. You need and want as many as possible. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Last year's run down the stretch of the regular season between the Giants and the Dodgers was one of the funnest regular seasons I've seen in a while in any sport. It was just neck and neck, and both of them like won every game seemingly. Giants luckily won the pennant, lost in the playoffs, unfortunately. After that amazing season last year, what would you say would be a realistic good season this year?
That's a good question. They're not going to win 107 wins again. I think that's, I mean, I'm pretty confident when I say that they're not going to repeat. Just so much went right in 2021 that it's impossible to expect the same for this year. But I also don't think it's realistic to see them back below 500. You know, they brought back a lot of their key starters. They didn't bring back one. Kevin Gausman signed with the Blue Jays. But I do think they're going to be competitive. I do think that they're going to add another bat at some point, whether that be before the season or whether that be in the middle of it. They're going to add a bat, I think. And it honestly depends on what kind of step the Dodgers take. You know, the Dodgers were kind of, you know, in a way gutted. Max Scherzer went to the Mets, and Clayton Kershaw is still a free agent. Dustin May is still recovering from Tommy John surgery. They have a nice 1-2 punch right now with Buehler and Urias. But, you know, and we don't know what Trevor Bauer, you know, I don't know his fate right now. So there's a bit of a question mark with LA. I think they're still going to be atop the division, but there's some minor, you know, question marks for, you know, them to be their usual self. Padres had a bit of a disappointment last year. You got to imagine they're ready to come back and stack some of their young talent and put them together and create a force. But I think the Giants are still, I still think it's a three-headed monster in the National League West. But a lot has to go right with the way the Giants play baseball. It's very platoon driven. They like to mix and match with their lineup. They like to mix and match with their bullpen. So it will be interesting to see. But I think, I mean, there's so many free agents out there that could still affect pennant races and divisions. It's too early to make predictions. And I feel like whenever anybody tries to make predictions for baseball, it ends up blowing up in their face.
Fair enough. Now, my last question before I let you go, and Matt might have one or two, is more just kind of want to get your general thoughts. Like I mentioned at the top, Bomber Day, Rob Manfred announced that they're officially now going to postpone the first regular season week of the season on top of already missing spring training. I'm not optimistic at all. Like, I'm thinking maybe July or June we might get this thing going, just based on how the stoppage went in 2020, how long it took. Even once they agreed on something, they then had to agree on how many games they're going to play. Is there any reason to be optimistic at all about this season starting anytime soon, in your opinion?
Yeah, no, it was a tough day. It was a tough day today. And I think we saw just a really, really, I mean, and this is going back to that question about being objective, and I'm not going to be objective here. Well, maybe I am being objective here. It was disgusting. It was disgusting the way to listen to how everything unfolded. And, you know, the Major League Baseball and the owners really pumped up the idea that they were close to a deal in the wee hours of Tuesday morning. And it turns out that wasn't true at all. And they were just feeding the media information that wasn't true. And it made their goal was to make the players look bad, look like the villains. And it failed, because I think most of the public knows what's going on. But in terms of when the season's going to start, I think negotiating as soon as possible is essential. I mean, there's so many great young stars in the game today. Baseball's in a great place when it's being played. that you can't waste it. You can't waste, you know, you can't put back seeing Ronald Acuna Jr. and Juan Soto and Tatis and all these guys. You can't like delay that for long, because people are going to start to lose interest and people are going to start to see this mess for what it is. So, I mean, July would be a major letdown. June would be a major letdown. Even May would be a major letdown. I think anything in April would be realistic, I think. I think they're going to get back to the negotiating table later this week when all parties are kind of back to where their home base is. So it's disappointing for sure, but I think there is a little bit of reason to be optimistic, because at the end of the day, I don't think the whole season is going to get canceled.
I hope not. I want baseball to be back. I want the Giants to be back. So hopefully it happens soon. We appreciate you coming on. Again, Steven Rizzotto, host of the Rizzocast. I assume that's anywhere you can get your pods. Is that right?
That's right.
Perfect. And then we'll tweet out a link to that as well in our little social media thing. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. Keep up the great work with your podcast, and it was a lot of fun.
All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. Big thanks to Steven Rizzotto for coming on. One of the things he talked about is that there are so many like young stars in baseball, and baseball is not taking advantage of it. I've said this before, not even the average person, but the average like 25-year-old sports fan, I don't think would recognize Mike Trout on the street. And they would all recognize like Tyler Hero or De'Aaron Fox or Jalen Hurts, but they wouldn't recognize Mike Trout, who's like the reincarnation of Mickey Mantle.
Right.
And he plays in Los Angeles. He doesn't play for the Dodgers, but he still plays in Los Angeles. You can't ask for a better situation, and baseball can't take advantage of it.
Right. Well, the other problem that I think baseball has is Mike Trout is just not interested in doing marketing and doing commercials and stuff. So like, that's fine for him. I'm not going to hold it against him. But the other thing is like, the Angels just haven't been good. And like, if the Angels had been good ever, then I think people would care about Mike Trout a little bit more. Same thing with Bryce Harper. Like, the Nationals have sometimes been good with him, but Bryce Harper's never went to a World Series with the Nationals. The Phillies have been okay, but they've missed the playoffs with Bryce Harper on the team. And it's hard to get excited about a baseball player who's not in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, and we've talked about this a lot, and we're going to talk about MLS coming up, but just finishing the conversation, like, Devin Booker is going to drop 25. Ja Morant is going to do his thing. Cam Newton in his prime is going to be a show. Bryce Harper could go 1-for-4 or, like, 0-for-4. Or like get walked twice or something. You know right. What I mean?
Yeah.
It's tough. Hopefully they figure it out though, because I want baseball to be back. I want the Giants to come back. So let's talk some soccer real quick. Then we're just going to end with a quick run through of the NFL or the quarterbacks coming into the NFL draft class. But wanted to talk about the MLS season, because again, it just kicked off this past weekend. Very high level stuff, but just kind of talk about who we think is going to win. You know, probably also like just because that's our favorite team. But I want to talk a little bit about LAFC, Philadelphia, the defending champs, New York City FC, NYCFC. Talk about Portland, who was in the finals last year. What are your thoughts, I guess? Any highlights or things you're excited about this upcoming season?
Yeah, a few things. I mean, I guess, well, maybe I'll highlight a team and you can highlight a team. We can kind of do like that.
Yeah.
One that I'm interested to see is the New England Revolution. Because they were last year, they won the Supporters Shield by a very, very wide margin, had an early playoff exit, which actually is pretty not universal, but very typical in MLS, is that a team has to go to the playoffs 2, 3, 4 times before they can win an MLS Cup. So I was surprised to see the Revolution go out that early. I wasn't incredibly surprised that they did not win the whole thing. This year is going to be interesting just to see if they can come back. I don't think they win the Supporters Shield by that wide of a margin. Just like Steven Rizzotto was saying about the Giants, you can't really have all of those things go right 2 seasons in a row. So it'll be interesting to see how well they do this year. The other thing is Matt Turner, their goalkeeper, who's kind of pushing Zach Steffen for the starting job on the U.S. men's national team. He's going to Arsenal, but he's not going till July, which is the middle of the season. So there's this awkward thing where he's still on the Revolution, but they've got to figure out what they're going to do when he leaves. And goalie is weird because, I mean, obviously goalie is a huge position. If they make a mistake, that can cost you 1 point. It can cost you 3 points. But you can also hide goalies with defense with some good center backs better than you can a lot of other positions. So it's going to be interesting how well that back line for New England is able to protect that new goalkeeper and how good that new goalkeeper is.
Yeah, one thing I didn't realize till doing my research, they signed Jose Altidor, Omar Gonzalez, Sebastian Leggett, all national team players, like national level type players, in the sunset of their careers, but like still quality players. Like you said, they shattered the record for the Supporters Shield last year. So I am interested to see what they do, especially goalie this summer. I think that'll be good. I think my interesting team in the East, and I want your thoughts, are the Philadelphia Union. Just because I thought they were really good last year. I think Dallas has the best academy in the league, and I'd put Real Salt Lake right behind them. But Philadelphia has been cranking out players to go to Germany and other European leagues. They have a really good academy as well. I think their defense is awesome. I think they shut people down, kind of encapsulate them. I think they're going to do really well this year. And they're my pick to win the East. New England would be a close second, though. I think those are the top two teams in the East. What are your chances on Philadelphia?
I don't have Philadelphia in the final, partly for this reason that I want to see teams in the playoffs going farther, you know, just before I put them in the finals. And Philly did really well last year. They won a playoff game or two. You know, what might help them the most is they fixed that bimbo on their jersey so it doesn't look terrible this year.
They did have one of the worst sponsor placement jerseys. You're right.
Yeah, so they've managed to fix that a little bit. I still don't love their jersey. No, but aside from that, I think they're not my pick, but I do think they're going to have a really good season.
Now, one former darling in MLS, and this was because of Josef Martinez and Miguel Almiron when he played there, but Atlanta, I don't want to say they've fallen off, but they at one point were running at least the Eastern Conference. Do you think they have enough ability to get back to the conference finals, win the East, or are they just going to be kind of a middling team again this season? They were good last year, but they weren't.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll say they've fallen off.
They weren't. They set such a high bar for themselves, I think, and yeah, now they're not reaching it.
Right. Well, the thing with Atlanta is, you know, Josef Martinez is obviously a incredibly talented player, but Miguel Almiron, I think, was one of the best players that we've had in Major League Soccer, and he had an incredibly special connection with Josef Martinez. And so I just think, I mean, no forward is going to play as good if they don't have a really good attacking midfielder that they have a really good partnership with. A lot of that has to do with talent. I don't think we've seen them, or really, frankly, any other team replace that talent in that position. And then there's a chemistry issue. So it's just like, are they going to get another attacking midfielder that has that really perfect chemistry with Josef Martinez? And I think the answer is no. And so with Josef Martinez not able to perform at his best, which is not necessarily his fault, I don't think that they're going to be, you know, setting the record for scoring like Josef Martinez did. And so do they make the playoffs? Yes. Do they win a game? Probably. I don't see them going a lot farther than that.
They started season 3-1 win over Sporting Kansas City. That season with Miguel Almiron, where Martinez set a scoring record at the time, that was incredible. Yeah. That was one of the coolest seasons ever. Before we move on to the West, and we can talk about other Eastern teams, but just a quick side note, Chicago, who's probably not going to be good this year, they signed Shaqiri, Swiss player. I just think he's really fun to watch. I think it's cool he's come to the league. I've always liked watching him play for Switzerland, who's one of the more underrated European teams, I think, as far as international level. Mm-hmm. Just a fun side note there for Chicago.
Yeah, that's fun. Well, here's another side note that is also not important. They had As far as the old logos go, I felt like with the crew, they had the best because it was this really interesting fireman thing that they had going on. And now what they've done is just made Real Salt Lake jerseys, which I find incredibly annoying. I mean, they don't look the same, but the logos look the same, and they've done the same colors and stuff. And I thought that fireman thing was so cool, and I think it's foolish to... It's fine if you modernize it. I just think it's foolish to go away from the fireman thing.
I think teams get worse and worse with jerseys. A lot of times the first idea... Sometimes it's not. Sometimes your first idea sucks. But, like, yeah, the crew had an awesome logo. Now it's just, like, a regular old...
Yeah.
Like... high school design, student designed it logo.
Right.
Just generic. Miami should be better just because they're Miami. David Beckham owns it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to be... They're not going to be worse than they were last year because that'd be impossible.
That's true. All right, let's go to the West. Let's just start with the LAFC because I think Carlos Vela... Maybe it's because I saw him play in person at an LAFC game. Maybe I'm biased, but I think he... If he's not the best player in the league anymore, he's one of the best. I think he, I don't know what to say other than I think he's very good. I think he's underrated somehow because when he came over, he didn't have the cachet of like a David Beckham or even a Robbie Keane. But I think he's, as far as like play in the league, been at or above those guys. Robbie Keane, I know, was a very prolific goal scorer. I'm higher on LAFC than I've seen a lot of other pundits being. I think they're going to win. If not the regular season, win the West and go to the MLS championship. They got a new coach, got another couple of players in, but it's a lot of it comes down to Carlos Vela. I think he's a man, so that's why I'm picking LAFC.
Yeah. Well, I will say soccer, I think, is a sport where to really understand what's going on, you have to actually go and see it. And I think the broadcasts have gotten a lot better, but I think just being able to observe the entire field, see all of the movements of all of the players, it's really, really important. Football, I think, is another one. Like basketball, I feel like you can just watch LeBron, the camera can focus on him, and you can understand it, right? But we both had the experience of going to that Chile-Argentina game and being like, oh, this is a totally different thing.
You can't picture it on TV. And the Barcelona game I went to was the same thing. Yeah, like we saw Chile-Argentina Copa America game, and it was just so like fast-paced, crisp passing. It wasn't even the same sport as a lot of stuff we watch normally.
Right.
And on TV, you can't see that difference.
Here. Yes, you don't get it. Because we'd obviously watch the World Cup, we'd watch Copa America on TV. So that, I mean, totally makes sense, and I totally see what you're saying about Carlos Vela, who I have not seen in person.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
So, yeah, as far as LAFC, I think the reason that I am lower on them with the majority of people is they've had the most talented team in MLS for quite some time. And so I kind of don't care at this point if they add more talent, if they still have the most talent. At some point, they've just got to go into the playoffs and win, and so it's going to be hard for me to pick them until I see that. Now, they do have a new coach, and so who knows how that goes. It's possible that he sees what Bob Bradley was not able to do and is able to fix some things. I think he has the benefit of seeing what did not work, make some changes. So I do expect them to be... better than they were with Bob Bradley. Not that I don't like Bob Bradley. I just think that is the nature of changing coaches in soccer and why you see coaches change teams in soccer so much more frequently than you do with certainly a sport like baseball, but even basketball and football where you have people sticking around for 10, 20, 30 years, which is besides Alexander Ferguson, unheard of.
Yeah, I think soccer, it's interesting because I think in the game, managers or coaches have like the least control of what's going on, but outside of the game, like the prep leading up to it, practice, things like that, they have more control on the outcome as any other sport, I would say. But like in the game, it's not as much as I think the culture you're building, the philosophies you're setting, like how your team is running during the game. So we'll see. Steve Cherundolo, former U.S. national team player. I think it'll be good. I think it's the year. Just quick side note on seeing players in person. Do you remember when we went to the Seahawks and Arizona Cardinals game?
I do remember that.
This was like 2017, I think. So Patrick Peterson was like a vet. Not even Patrick Peterson prime, but I was watching him and I was like speechless at how good Patrick Peterson was in person. And you remember me, I think. It was unbelievable. Yeah, seeing people in person just doesn't give completely different perspective.
Yeah, I will say that, I mean, I know that a lot of our listeners are in Utah where we lost the Royals, unfortunately, but I think if you do have the opportunity to go to a women's soccer game, I think that you will see that talent come across more than it does on TV. I mean, obviously, we can watch the women's national team like anybody can see on TV that Alex Morgan is amazing, Carly Lloyd is amazing, but I do think that going, seeing it on TV, you can see, okay, these girls are maybe running faster than it might come across. You can see a lot more power in the kicks. So if women's soccer is something you haven't gotten into quite yet, I would recommend going to a game in person.
What's a team in the West that either you're high on or you're low on? Some you want to highlight.
Well, I mean, it's impossible not to be high on Seattle. You know, last year they had a little bit earlier playoff exit than they're used to, but I just think they have a history of being a really, really great team. The only thing I've seen people say against them is with Rusnak, they've got so much talent up at the front that they're not going to know what to do, which can be a problem in soccer because you do only have the 11 starting spots. But Seattle's got such a great culture that I just have to think they're going to be able to figure it out.
I am annoyed at Seattle because they keep taking everyone from Real Salt Lake, but they are very good. You're right. I don't think the Galaxy are going to be as good as these two teams we've talked about, and certainly Seattle has more potential than LFC. I will give you that. But I will have to say I really like watching Chicharito. I loved watching him in Europe, play in Germany, for Leverkusen, play at Manchester United. Love that he's in L.A. Houston Dynamo just signed Hector Herrera from Atletico Madrid, who's going to come over in July, the same time Matt Turner's leaving MLS to go to Arsenal, like you said. The Mexican national team is one of the funnest teams to watch, and I love that a lot of their either like former really good players play in the MLS because we get a chance to watch all of them. I know they're the main rivals with the U.S. national team, but I very much enjoy watching the Mexican national team. And all these players that we're talking about, I think they make up a lot of the best players in the league. So, especially in the summer, Hector Herrera coming from Atletico Madrid, going to be a huge boost for Houston, which probably isn't going to be very good, but it'll be good for him. Good for them.
Yeah.
Trying to think what else. So I think LAFC is going to beat Philly in the final is my prediction. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't think, like, Cincinnati's not going to be good. I think it'll be a lot of the same, honestly. Like, the same teams are going to be good. Sporting's going to be good. Portland won't be as good, but I think they'll be good. I don't think NYCFC – well, they were the fourth seed in the East last year, so they'll probably be about that. I don't think they'll repeat, but I think they'll be another good team. I don't see a lot of change up and down from last year.
No, I don't think so. This wasn't a big year for big name transfers. Toronto did get that really good Italian player whose name escapes me right now.
Someone find it.
Yeah, Jake may be able to find it. I'm picking Seattle. You know, I think this is a year Seattle just kind of makes a comeback. I know I always pick Seattle, but I just believe in them. As far as the East goes, I think the Revolution are going to get very, very far. I feel like they're going to be able to figure out what to do when Matt Turner leaves. So I would think them or NYCFC to come out of the East.
I'm going to mispronounce this. Lorenzo Insigne. He signed from Napoli to come over and play for Toronto.
That's the one.
Maradona's club, Napoli.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't see Toronto being particularly good, although he is a really, really, really great player. So Toronto may be a team to mark on your local MLS calendars for when you want to go see a game.
Nope. Let's just take 2 minutes, unless we have any other MLS comments. But I love MLS. Go check it out. Really excited for it. Let's just take a couple minutes to run through some quarterbacks real quick. And then just because it's draft season, we have to talk about the draft a little bit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to run through the top 4 or 5, unless there's any questions you have specifically.
No, I think this is a you run through and then I can react.
Yeah, and we'll have more draft-focused podcasting content later on, but just kind of want to get going just because I'm really excited about it. My favorite event of the year, Matt Corral from Ole Miss, I think is the best one. I've liked him since high school. He's really athletic, can be a primary, not a primary rusher, but like can be a rushing threat in the NFL. Good arm talent, really tough. So recovering from an ankle injury, so hasn't played in the Senior Bowl, won't throw the combine, which is happening right now. But Matt Corral is my number one guy. Sam Howell, close number two from North Carolina. So I watched about 95% of his games in college just because I watched like every Carolina football game. Huge arm, and his high school tape is like identical to Baker Mayfield's high school tape, which I know Baker's not playing great, but and the college he was awesome. Sam Howell's huge arm. He has really nice touch for having a big arm. He's pretty athletic as well, especially in the red zone, can be a rushing threat, which is getting more and more important. Any quarterback who's not athletic, even like Joe Burrow, he's not going to run, but he is athletic enough where he can maneuver the pocket. Any quarterback who can't really do that, I'm not high on. Malik Willis is my third guy. Can be number one. He has the highest ceiling from Liberty. Auburn transfer. Huge arm, super athletic, really, really smart guy as well. He's out of those three the least refined with like footwork and things like that. But if he's the best one, I wouldn't out of those three in the NFL 10 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Those are the only three I would spend a first round pick on. I don't like Kenny Pickett. I just think you're getting like Andy Dalton, David Carr, or excuse me, Derek Carr. Good players, but like I don't want to draft a first rounder with Derek Carr. You know what I mean?
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, cause the thing about like if you said to me, it's like, hey, you are going to have Derek Carr for 10 years or you could be struggling to find a quarterback, I would feel pretty happy getting Derek Carr. I mean, I realize this is a theoretical situation.
I'd rather be struggling to find a quarterback.
Really?
Because here's the thing. If you're struggling, you're going to be bad and you're going to be drafting. If I don't have a top 10 quarterback, I don't want one is my view of it. Yeah, that's why I did like Jimmy Garoppolo.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Like Jimmy Garoppolo is fine. I'd say Derek Carr is better, but I don't think like you can win a Super Bowl with those guys. So it's not like it's impossible. It's just a lot easier with a better quarterback.
Can you win the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo though, Jake?
I don't think you can.
Yeah. I would say Derek Carr. I think you probably could. Jimmy Garoppolo, no.
Here's what I want to point out. I said the same thing. I give quarterbacks. If you're in a championship scenario and you post a quarterback rating below 10, I give up on you. Colin Kaepernick, NFC Championship game 2013, three interceptions in the fourth quarter. I gave up on him. I said, no, thank you. You can't win. Let's move on to the next guy. That took a little bit. We got to Jimmy Garoppolo. Posted a 2.8 QBR in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. Said, no, thank you. I have a very low bar to clear, but last two Niners quarterbacks couldn't do it. So
I thought QBR was like the SAT where you couldn't get lower than like a 60.
Throwing into the dirt, you get like a 37 every play. Just spiking it, you just get a 37.
Yeah.
So it was frustrating. So that's why I don't like Kenny Pickett. Carson Strong, huge arm, Nevada quarterback, but he just doesn't move. He's like a statue. And I was so high on Josh Rosen coming out because of his awesome throwing motion. He did everything like a surgeon, but he just couldn't move in the pocket, and I think that's where a lot of the issues came from. So I'm really hesitant about guys who can't at least maneuver the pocket. And mm-hmm. Joe Burrow's an example of someone who's not quote-unquote athletic but can maneuver enough. Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, I'd say Matt Ryan especially, but those guys also can maneuver a pocket and manipulate a pocket even if they're not going to be like a Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson or a Josh Allen type of running threat, you know?
Right, yeah. No, and I do think – and was to talk about why that's important. Obviously, it's more common, so it's going to be more popular. But I think if you look at defenses now, you've got not much smaller guys. You have slightly smaller guys on the defensive line, particularly on the edges, people who are getting the quarterback more. And they're so much faster than they have been, you know, other than like, you know, people like Lawrence Taylor who are just really freaks. You didn't have really crazy fast guys. But now you look at all these defensive ends are fast. They're really, really fast. And so being able to maneuver, it's not just like a nice thing anymore. It's like, no, you need to do this or you're going to be sacked a lot.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. Yeah. You're exactly right. So those are the guys, Sam Howell, Matt Corral, Malik Willis. Again, we'll get some more detailed draft stuff as we're coming up. We're like a month and a half away. Parker, what did you think of the show?
Oh, it was great. The baseball writer, is fun to talk to him, and you know, it was great to be here. I think, yeah, podcast is a fun hobby. I like it a lot.
Perfect. Happy to have you on. We talked Parker out of surf last summer in California. So next pro surfer coming at you. Appreciate everybody listening. Again, go check out Ghost Golf. They got some awesome stuff. Links in my website or my bio on Instagram and stuff and Twitter. This is going to be everywhere. Big thanks to Steven Risotto for coming on, and we'll talk to you guys later.